This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 590, brought to you by Harry's. Go to Harry's.com right now and enter code iFanboy at checkout to get free post-shave balm. That's Harry's.com, code iFanboy, and iFanboy listeners just like you.
Sing a song. If the sun refuses to shine, I don't mind. If the mountains fell in the sea, let it be. It ain't me.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 590. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm alongside my co-host Josh Flanagan.
Hello, fellow Jamoke.
And Ron Richards is once again under federal indictment.
Again.
You think after the last time he would have learned?
I just think that he really likes the word racketeering. He's a big fan of that word, and he gets him in trouble every time.
He's got affinity for trash and racketeering.
So, it's in his blood.
We'll see what happens with his latest lawyer, how quickly he can get him out. But we'll hold the his seat warm. Until then, we are iFanboy. We read our comics every week. One of us picks their favorite book. We call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books from the week. The patron pick. We get some superpowers out. We read some listener mail. There's a lot of stuff going on. It's an action-packed show is what it is. And it's fun. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be spoilers. I understand, Josh, there's some spoilers in this Pick of the Week you had this week.
There's almost assuredly going to be. Yes. I'm not gonna pussyfoot around it. I was like, am I allowed to say pussyfoot? I'm gonna go ahead and say it. So I went for it.
So what was the pick?
The pick of the week was The Mighty Thor number 20. When we shuffle from Jane Foster Mighty Thor over to a new Thor, and I'm going to go ahead and let the people know that we're talking about Volstagg.
So
it was clearly on the cover, by the way.
Yeah, so it's not a spoiler. So now the focus of the Mighty Thor, the book, is no longer Jane Thor. Now it's Volstagg Thor. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, so what we have here is the beginning of the story. As Thor readers may or may not know, unlike the inhuman thing that is going through everything in the world over at Marvel, over in the Thor world, the big thing is the war that has been going on for years now, which is kind of interesting from a storytelling standpoint, between the Dark Elves and the Light Elves. And basically Volstagg shows up at sort of an emergency Congress of the Worlds, I think it's called. Yeah, basically. But he's going to visit a refugee camp of the Light Elves that have been put in sort of whatever the dwarfs' home world is. And there's all these children and they're starving, and Volstagg, you know, when he gets there, there's jokes about like, well, when's lunch? Are we going to have enough food? And he's sort of that fun, lighthearted character, but, you know, he's also the Warriors Three. He's one of the Warriors Three. So he's
a badass.
Yes, he is the point. So anyway, the camp is attacked and a lot of people are killed, including some cute children. And he is very angry because he's the only thing that survives the Muspelheim fire that is dropped upon them. And he looks over and he sees a hammer and he picks it up.
When you see a hammer, there's only one thing you can do with a hammer.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, I don't know if it's a girdle of some kind, but all of a sudden his weight is redistributed, and he becomes the War Thor.
War Thor. So is that...
War Thor.
So he picks up the Ultimate Thor hammer.
It looks like it, yeah.
The cover, that's what it looks like.
Yep. I guess that's the Ultimate Thor one. I think it looks like Battery Bills, but it's not.
Where's Jane Thor?
She is going through a thing where... There's a little scene at the beginning where Odinson Thor, and it's very difficult to be clear about this because I just want to call him Thor because he's Thor.
It's his name.
Yeah. Odinson is mad at her that she was Thor the whole time and didn't tell him. And she's basically like, I'm about to die. And if I go and I be Thor again, basically who I am now will die and I will have, you know, that's, and it's hard not to do that. It's actually reminiscent of if you've been reading comics for 30 something years. A long time ago, Tony Stark had an angry girlfriend, and she shot him, paralyzing him from the waist down, and he became addicted to wearing the armor because he had fixed it so that he could wear the armor, and then he would have his legs back.
Right.
And this is a lot, which I remember, I must have been 10, 11 when that happened, but I remember it. It was very affecting. And this is actually very similar to that. Like, when she is Thor, when she's holding the hammer, she no longer has cancer, but she's in like late stage cancer. She's not going to make it.
Right. So that's interesting. So is she in Jane form now or Thor form now?
She's in Jane form. She's trying to do some good as her own thing and give up being Thor. Because if she when she's Thor, she doesn't feel it, but her cancer is still advancing. And so she's getting sicker because she's not getting treatment or doing anything to herself as Thor, but she doesn't feel it. So she would have to stay as Thor forever.
Could her Jane body die while in the Thor form? And then when she changes back, she's dead?
I guess that's sort of how it's implied. I don't know the exact way that it goes.
She's like Schrodinger's Thor.
I've never had anybody pronounce it with the emphasis on dinger.
Yeah, it's been a rough morning.
Well, it's a baseball thing.
So why is Thor still not Thor?
He's unworthy.
Still?
Yeah.
When is he going to become worthy again? Because we know he's eventually Thor again.
There's like a thing where they're both kind of looking at the hammer, right. You know? And I think, I don't know, if I it's very much alluded to more than said. Like, I you know, if I'm him, I'd be kind of afraid to pick up the hammer because he doesn't want to know that he's unworthy again, you know? So it's like a whole thing. Right. And he, I guess it's like a, you know, you feel it. You feel whether you're worthy or not. But... You know, we spent a lot of time with Jane Foster as Thor, and that's still there in the offing, which I've actually really enjoyed. And then we're going to get to spend time with Volstagg. And quite honestly, I've always liked Volstagg. Mm-hmm. He's been a fun character, but I've also liked that duality of, like, if he needs to muscle up, he's going to. And he has, you know, he's kind of sweet and he's kind of funny, but he's got a lot of presence. And now, you know, I think Jason Aaron is, like, as far as I'm concerned, as long as he's writing as Guardians, I'm fine. Like, right. I think he does it really well. Not even really well. He does it better than anybody's done it in years and years. I mean, this is really the longest sustained Thor epic. It's like a series of novels at this point, basically.
Well, it's been, what, like 5 years? 6 years?
It's been a long time, yeah. And you know, Russell Dodderman's only getting better. And it's just a really fun book. So the behind the scenes, I guess, is that early in the week – when we started our patron voting for these books, this was in the lead at first.
It was in the lead for a couple of days, yeah.
Which is silly, by the way, because we're going
to
read it.
No, they wanted me to read it.
Oh, I see. Oh.
It was a targeted strike against me.
It is all about you.
You were targeted a couple of weeks ago. This time I was targeted. So
notably.
Yeah.
When did this become adversarial?
I don't know. We thought this would be a fun thing, and now it's become this sort of vindictive knife twist by the patrons. We'll get to that later. We enjoy it.
The first or second thing I read, and I just really enjoyed it. And then, like, I had it's one of those weeks where, like, not all the comics were great, but the first few I read were really enjoyable, and
that
helps.
That was a good. I mean, anytime you have 25 comics to read in a week, you're gonna get a couple that are good.
Yeah, but I just did happen to, like, front load some of the really enjoyable ones. And as soon as I finished that, I was like, wow, that could be pick of the week. And I never got past it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it isn't one of those things where I was like, this issue was amazing, but I just enjoyed reading it. And I've found that over time, you know, my criteria for something being pick of the week has been much more like that. I just had fun with that, man. That was great.
Well, at the end of the day, these are fun, right? That's what.
Yeah, and if I get to watch Volstagg run around and be Thor, and, you know, and all the... all the other intrigue that's going to bring, because everyone was mad at Jane Foster for being Thor. They didn't know she was, but they were, you know, they thought she was an outsider and a usurper and everything. There's just another sort of version of that story. And I don't think that they've ever, you know, really gotten into the, other than the Beta Ray Bill story, I can't remember a whole lot of, you know, who else is worthy and why they would be. But in this instance, you know, Thor was, and it comes out in that, again, like going back to when I was a kid a little bit, like I remember there was a story called the Once in Future Thor, I think. And like they flash forwarded to some weird apocalyptic Asgardian future, and he had like a leather and like a visor kind of thing. And I remember seeing that image and thinking, God, that looks really cool. And and like hunting. And I saw it like in the back of an old issue. And so I had to go find it. And I remember like I mail ordered it. Like I mail ordered the issue from somewhere. And I sent them, you know, $10, where I dropped like a bunch of change into an envelope. And it was sent to me. And like, that's what this sort of Thor at the end, this Volstagg, reminds me of. Like, it's just a, it's all, we're basically doing Elseworlds Thor at this point as part of the regular series.
Right. That's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It was really good. The war is really coming home to me, like how sort of serious and heavy they're taking this war and making it. And it feels significant, whereas so many other things don't. Or if they are significant, like the Inhuman stuff, I don't care.
Well, I think Jason Aaron does a really good significant tone.
Yes.
He has a way of writing where it feels like it's important what's happening. Mm-hmm. He's a very epic tone in the way he can write, and especially with the Thor books. So that's...
Yeah.
Like when he wrote that one event, it felt like it was an event because it's just the way right. He writes. So he's got that down. And for Thor, that's needed.
Yeah.
These are universe spanning.
And he sticks with it, but while also still making it feel like we're moving forward. Some of the other writers will do, you know, 10, 12 issue arcs, and you've had enough of them.
Right.
This has been happening here. So.
So this week I had 25 books to read. What I didn't take into account would that half of them would be extra-sized.
Yeah, that got you.
That was a kick in the balls this week, DC.
You are a rare... I mean, we are not the average reader.
Yeah, so. It's a lot of reading. We have to get it done quickly for the show.
Yeah.
We joke on the show about how, you know, comics will do the 25th issue anniversary, every number ending in 5. But they did it this week at DC. All the 25th issues were extra-sized anniversary issues. So that was fun, where I got my DC books and I was like, oh no, these are all very long. But Batman 25, which is the start of the War of Jokes and Riddles from Tom King and Michael Janin.
I've been saying Mikkel Janin.
Mikkel Janin.
Yeah.
I think Tom King's hitting a stride with Batman.
I got to say, I started and I thought, oh, another thing. It's gonna And I saw Jokes and Riddles. I thought, oh, they're really going back to Joker again. But and I was like, wait, something significant happened at the end of the last issue. And I couldn't remember what it was until I got to sort of the last page. But you're right. Like, that's the thought that I had. Like, and I talked to Tom, I guess a little over a year ago, where, you know, he pretty much kind of admitted, he's like, I don't know, I had the idea for the one story, and after that I was sort of winging it. And so that first one was really good and interesting. And then, you know, we watched him try to find his way a little bit and what he had and what he thought was interesting.
Yep.
And I think that we are seeing him dig into Bruce Wayne in his way. I mean, Scott Snyder also dug into Bruce Wayne in a certain way, but this is different. It feels much more internal, I guess. Really, it's really good, though.
It's not mythological. Like, the thing that Snyder liked to do was to dig into Gotham City and the history of Gotham City and the things that make Gotham, the things that about Gotham that make Batman. This is much more internal to Bruce. And so what we've got here is, after last issue in which Batman proposed to Catwoman, he is telling her the story of an old adventure in which the Riddler and the Joker, I guess, are going at each other to kill each other because neither one wants the other to kill Batman. And I don't know if it's because I've been rewatching Batman the Animated Series, but he said from the beginning he wanted to try to emulate that tone. Mm-hmm. This feels very much like that.
I can definitely get that.
I like seeing the villains team up or go at each other. You know, that's always fun, mm-hmm. especially the Batman villains. There's a long history of that. In the beginning, it looks like they're going to be teaming up to kill Batman, but then you realize that they're actually going to go at each other. And there's a great page at the end where you see all the sort of major villains fighting. There's a really great double page, almost a 4-page spread that happens.
Yep. Yep.
And I love the composition of that, where it's a knock-knock joke. Knock-knock, and you turn it into who's there. It was a really unexpected way to use the page.
What I think I like about this a lot, and this is happening both with Bruce Wayne in this and in the flashback with the Joker and Riddler, is you've got each one of these characters is actually trying to figure out how to break out of their rut.
Right.
Which is the same problem that the comic book writer has. It's so like how do we do this so that it's not the same as whatever, but it's true to what the thing is. And they're being introspective about it on the page. And I find that very sort of fascinating, is sort of what's going on in the head of the writer and what he's trying to get to. At least that's the metaphor as I see it.
And Mikkel Janin, how are you saying it?
Janine? I don't know. Go ahead.
He's really great in this issue. I love his Joker. It's not the current Joker that we're seeing in the Forge with the shaved side of the head. It's a very classic, almost Brian Bolland-esque Joker.
Yeah.
They just don't know what to do with the Riddler. He's had like four different looks throughout the course of the New 52, including a terrible shaved question mark into his head.
Ugh.
Here he's sort of like a hip badass with the shirt unbuttoned way down his chest and a slick back hair and sideburns. I like that he has a different kind of face. You don't see that kind of face very often in comics. They give him here. He's got like sort of taxicab with doors open ears and round nose. I guess kind of like the animated series a little bit.
Yeah.
I just like the way this book looks a lot.
I do too. I like Janine. I think I've seen him on a few things. He did like Justice League Dark is where we first saw him. And I kind of dug that. And I think that this actually looks much more natural than that did.
Yes. It's really good. He does great shadow work here.
Yep. Which is the right book for it. As was Justice League Dark, I assume.
I like a flashback story. I enjoy this. I'm curious where it goes. The opening scene where Joker just keeps killing stand-up comedians was creepy and terrifying.
I really like the idea of the second guy who came up. All right, it's my turn.
First, drag the body off.
There's also a panel in here where Joker gets in a cab, or he's in a car, he's being driven, and he tells a joke to the driver. And the driver doesn't laugh at first, and then he laughs really hard.
Yeah.
And I've never seen that done, timing-wise, as sort of the forced laugh of the henchman.
Right.
I just was like, oh, that's a new thing. I've never seen, and I really just like the layout of that. And it's funny, because if you read a lot of Tom King, you'll know that he's a guy who really sticks to the 9-panel grid, and he's way out of it in this.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the scripts are necessarily being written differently, but the artists are doing what they want to with that. And a lot of this looks like half of it looks like it was adapted from a 9-panel grid or something like that. But a lot of it wasn't. Those two pages that you mentioned earlier, obviously, that was another thing I was like, I don't see that very often.
Yeah. You can count on that with a Tom King book that he's going to play with the form.
Yep.
And the structure of it.
It's starting to get kind of tiring, but he's kind of the really interesting comic book writer, mainstream comic book writer right now.
Stop being so good, is what Josh is saying.
Well, I'm saying somebody else need to be so good so we don't sound like we're quite so far up your ass.
Did you notice how big Daredevil's hand was on the cover of Daredevil 22?
I didn't, but I'm about to. All right, Daredevil 22.
It's a nice cover, Mike Deodato Jr.
I was expecting like a foreshortening issue, but what I'm seeing here is a bulk in, well, the one arm seems to match the other arm in girth.
He's got giant, like, Hulk Hogan-esque pythons and giant meat hooks.
This is not how Daredevil is built.
No, he's, anyway, I liked the cover other than the giant arms, but.
Yes.
So in this issue, Charles Soule, Gore, and Suzuka, we find out what Matt Murdock's big plan is to cease all crime.
I liked it, actually.
I did too. I mean, it's authentic, but it's still silly that he thinks that he can stop all crime.
No, it's totally super goofy, and I liked that. In that, he just is basically the premise here is that Murdoch is trying to find a loophole in which superheroes can remain anonymous but also testify under oath, which is stupid.
Right.
Wouldn't happen. But it's comic book logic in a way. And the fact is, if they could in this world, and you've got to remember writer Charles Soule is an attorney, I don't know if he's still practicing, but he was as of very recently and he did for a long time. So he's not unfamiliar with sort of the law. And I'm guessing he just came upon the idea like, if these guys should testify, that changes everything. And Murdoch said something along the line of we don't have to tie them up outside the police station and leave a note anymore. Like Spider-Man and Batman have been doing for so many years. And it's a fun concept to play with, and I feel like he's the guy to do it. And it's like equal parts silly and like serious.
Yeah.
A little tongue-in-cheek.
It's totally that. I don't dislike – I actually like the issue a lot. I just found it – I find it a little hard to believe that Murdoch, as smart as he is, would think this. I mean, it works ultimately. He's allowed to testify, but he thinks this was going to be the thing that rids the city of all crime, which I think is
– well.
Someone like Murdoch, I think, should be a little more cynical about
that's things. Just bombast.
Yeah.
That's comic book bombast.
But it was good, and the Orange the Zook arc was good, and now we've got Kingpin and the old suit back, at least for this issue.
I also, I literally explained. I also just, I like the idea, I've developed an idea of Matt Murdock in my head that he's doesn't make good decisions. He's self-destructive, he's headstrong, and he's overconfident, and that's the only way he's able to do what he does. So that makes sense why he's behaving like this, I guess. Yeah, it was another fight in a courtroom. Basically, he really liked throwing the gavel around.
It was fun.
Yep.
Did you read Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, #1?
I did.
So this is Marvel's basically concession that Dan Slott's been writing Amazing Spider-Man for 35 years.
That's it?
Well, it could be 75. I'm not quite sure. And we need to have a book for other people who don't want to read that book. Even though it's a very successful book, it's always in the top 10. It makes a ton of money. But they have a movie coming out next month. People may not want to jump from the movie, but the high school Peter Parker to a book featuring Steve Jobs Peter Parker. So this is more of your traditional Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man, than you will find in Amazing Spider-Man currently. This is more the kind of Peter. He's still that dude from Amazing Spider-Man, but he's basically not that dude from Amazing Spider-Man. He has the job and the corporation, but he just doesn't deal with it in this comic.
I found that to be confusing a little. I don't think I don't get Chip Zdarsky. I mean, I get it. Like, he's the guy that is the funny one. And I made some air quotes. Mm-hmm. And he might be. But I don't think it's that funny. This felt like it's trying to be funny and lighthearted, but it wasn't really all that interesting. And, you know, I've read a bunch of it. I get it. And it's not even that it's not funny. It's just it's not my sense of humor. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hit you with 15 jokes and maybe 3 will land. But I'm not convinced that that's not Peter Parker's sense of humor.
I'm not either. I just don't think I want to read it. So I'm not even saying it's wrong. I just am not interested in this at this point. I do know that, like, when I got the first two page spreads in the beginning. First of all, if I don't know that I'm looking at the Human Torch, then you need to give the Human Torch a different outfit.
Exactly.
That's closer to Jim Hammond.
What the fuck is he wearing?
I don't know. But anyway, the first two page spreads are just words.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And then the next ones are words. And it really is like, even if that stuff is interesting, if I'm like on the fence about wanting to read a book and I just see a lot of that, it turns me off. And it makes me want to just sort of skip through it a little. I just think if you have a built-in audience and you're Greg Rucka and you give me the book and it has lots of that, I'm not going to notice it. But if I'm not sure if I want to, then I tend to not like that as a way to make comics. It's pages of talking before I know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good way. It's very much telling, not showing. And also, I really just don't like that there's a character named Watu.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about. I don't know if he's a watcher. I know I've seen him before, but I don't really care to know anything more because it's just... I always like stories about the guys who build gadgets.
Yep.
I liked the gag about Ant-Man's suit being malfunctioned, so he could only be about 3 feet tall, and then later on he makes himself he's able to be even taller than he was before. Like,
right.
That was funny. Like, oh, I can actually give myself a couple inches.
Yeah.
Like that was good. I really want to read a Spider-Man book, so I'm going to give this another shot. I liked it. I didn't super love it, but I'm curious. But also, so at the end, this guy shows up and he zaps Peter in a suit looking very much like Iron Man. And this happened again in this week. I think the X-Men book, the Sentinel ended up with a suit that had the way that the hexagon is on his chest looks like Iron Man. And the same thing happened with the Sentinel this week. I don't know why they keep aping the Iron Man look with all these mechanical people. I'm going to give it another shot.
I'm not.
That's fine.
I honestly, like, I haven't read a Spider-Man book outside of a Bendis one, like, regularly forever. Like, I feel like I've just watched a million people so be like, here's my take on it. And it's very – I don't feel like a lot of people have brought a lot to it. I remember, you know, like, the things that stand out, I think Mark Waid did some nice work. Joe Kelly did some really nice work too many years ago.
Just because I need to stay on brand, I really hate the Spider-Man redesign here.
Well, let's be completely upfront about one thing. That spider isn't glowing, so it's 100% improvement.
No, that's great. It's just that the boots that go up the side of his thigh are weird.
Yeah, I don't like that. I actually didn't really look at it. I just noticed that it wasn't glowing.
Yeah. I noticed it too, and I wonder if that cover, the choice of the cover, was like a indicator. This is not the other Spider-Man. It's not glowing. If you're looking for a Spider-Man story that's not Dan Slott's current Tech Spider story, then this is one for you if you like Chip Zdarsky and it's Andy Kubert.
I'm guessing a lot of people will like this book.
Right.
there's a page in here where Johnny Storm is sitting there, like, waiting for somebody for six panels.
It's Peter. Peter broke his date.
Yeah, I know. But, no, that's...
Peter was going to meet him for the movies, to go to the movies. That was set up in the first bit.
Point is, like, I didn't know who it was.
Right.
I didn't know who I was looking at. And then the person said, hey, aren't you? And he said, no. And I was like, but I don't know what the joke is. But I just didn't put it together because I didn't know it was him at the beginning. I like Johnny Storm as a character. I just wish that I'd sort of... I don't know. There wasn't enough indicator, I guess. But that's because he's been out of it. There's no Fantastic Four, so I don't look for them anymore.
Yeah. I liked the backup, which was drawn by Goran Parlov from Fury.
Oh, is that? Yeah, I was just looking through it. I've realized that I have a problem with digital comics that I don't realize there's a backup a lot of times.
See, I scroll all the way to the end to get to the little button that takes you back to my books.
Yeah, okay.
It's Black Widow and S.H.I.E.L.D. testing Spider-Man's powers. It was fun, and I liked the Goran Parlov art a lot.
I was trying to figure out who the artist was, and I was like, this is the art. This is the stuff. The way that he draws Spider-Man?
It's sort of Romita-esque.
Get that guy on a book.
Yeah.
This is how you know, like, even that knee thing doesn't even seem that bad there.
He looks like very much like John Romita Sr. And then when he draws Black Widow and the other S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, it looks like, oh, it's the guy who drew Fury. It looks great.
Colors by Nathan Fairbairn. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's a really good
book. I want the book to look like this. That's great.
I wasn't thrilled with the keyboard art, but I enjoyed it enough where I'll read the next issue. So let's talk about Aquaman 25, which you probably didn't read.
I didn't, but here's what's interesting is that I saw the preview for it at the end of one of the books, and I thought, oh, that's a good look for Aquaman. Because I've been aware of Stefan's, I don't know how to say it, Sajic, I guess.
Sajic.
Yeah, Sajic for a long time. And he's interesting and unique, but I don't know where he fits in other than his weird sort of pseudo-sex image comics. But I was like, oh, this kind of works as like a murky underwater kind of deal.
He fits here.
That's what I was getting at, basically. Like, I was like, oh, what a nice fit that seems to be.
You know the scene in Pulp Fiction where they stab Uma Thurman with the adrenaline to wake her up? This was like this book. Because the last arc I thought was a slog. And the arc before that I thought was a slog. This had been one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
So in the last issue at the very end, there's a coup. And the more militant members of the royal court kill Arthur. They stab him in the chest and they take over. They put their own guy on the throne. Here we have the fallout, and we have a new artist, as Josh said, still Dan Abnett. And this was like a shot in the chest. This was really, really good. It looked great, but it's also now the story is really interesting. So now you have a whole upside down world in Atlantis where you've got the militant side of things in charge. They've locked down Atlantis with magic. So you can't leave Atlantis. You can't get in or leave. And they're imposing their will on the people. They've got groups of thugs going around, rounding up undesirables and rounding up non-pure Atlanteans. And it felt very much like some of the best Peter David stuff in the 90s, where he really explored what it was like in the city.
Are you saying he went deep?
He went deep in it.
See? Water?
So deep. Well, even better is that where, spoiler alert, Aquaman's not really dead. Where he's at hiding is the Ninth Triad, which is like a district. And it's the one that's in like a deep trench. It's where all the undesirables live, where all the poor live. And the new king has sent down troops to clear out the Ninth Triad, but they have a hero they're calling the Aquaman. They all think the king's dead, so they think he's his ghost. And Arthur basically says, you know what? I'm going to go Bruce here. I'm going to become a shadowy vigilante for a little while. I'm going to take some inspiration from my Justice League teammate. One thing I liked a lot about the art is that he kind of draws hair like it's underwater, like the hair is kind of floating in a lot of times. You know, that's one of the funny things about these comics, these Aquaman comics, amongst many funny things, is these people just look like they're standing in regular air, like the water's never moving their hair around. And here he kind of draws it like they're in water. Their hair's not going to lay flat in their heads.
Yeah.
We talked last week when you were on the show about Aquaman's quote-unquote new look, where he has the beard and long hair to sort of mimic Jason Momoa. I think it looks great.
Or just in the 90s.
Right, but I mean, it's for the movie. But coupled with the classic outfit, I think it's a great look. And I actually really like, I always liked bearded, long-haired Aquaman as a look.
Yeah, it totally works. And it's funny because I didn't even really notice it because I'm just like, it just looks right to me. But that seems to be the case. We seem to like bearded superheroes. Yeah. And that's not a new thing. Like, that's not in the 2000s. People had beards. When I was a kid, like when I saw Thor with a beard, I was like, that's how it should look.
Like a man.
Well, you know, some of them, like, this is one of those characters where it fits. Totally like, having fits. Superman with a beard was like, oh, that's a novelty and it's kind of cool. But ultimately, that doesn't fit. Or Captain America or something. But, right. Like, this guy, you know, he's a Viking, totally. More or less.
I recommend you read this. I recommend anybody who has been reading Aquaman has fallen off. Aquaman 25 could very much be Aquaman number one of a new volume.
Oh, that's great.
It seems like an exciting new direction with exciting art. Interesting situation to put Aquaman in where he's trapped in a city and has to be operating the shadows because he's being hunted by his own government. And now you've got a love interest. He rescues a woman who's a mutant who's being... they try to round her up and he rescues her. So now Mera finds out her husband's alive. She's going to try to get back in Atlantis to save him. And she says, nothing can come between us. And then you see a shot of Aquaman rescuing the new girl. So clearly there's going to be some intrigue there as well. I think this was like the most exciting book I read this week.
That's great.
Yeah, I was really happy. This was one of those books I was like, damn, because I was so down on. I was actually considering dropping it because I was so down on the last arc and change. It was just so boring. And it's the same writer. I just think he's rejuvenated by the new art.
And he's doing a different.
Great writer.
He is a great writer, and this sounds more like his wheelhouse, where you're just like everyone's in a locked room. It's sci-fi and intrigue and all sorts of stuff. It's funny because I saw the preview in the back of whatever other book, and I thought, oh, and I literally made that noise. Well, that looks interesting, which was,
We talked a lot about how art is, getting to be a problem in a lot of these books, but this is one book where it's not. It's
still
going to
come out.
Yeah, we'll see how
it's still going to. He does art, color, and inks. He does the whole thing, and they're coming out every 2 weeks. So, gird your loins because it's not staying.
It'll be stick figures.
Yeah.
So real quick, I don't want to spend too long on these, but last week, Ron and I talked about the two Looney Tunes specials. So we had Legion of Superheroes and Bugs Bunny, and we had Martian the Manhunter and... I'm sorry, The Martian Manhunter and Marvin the Martian.
That's the name of my reboot series, Martian the Manhunter.
We had Wonder Woman, Tasmanian Devil, and Lobo Roadrunner. And both of these kind of failed for the same reason why Marvin the Martian and Martian Manhunter failed. It's because so far the only book that's done it what we feel the right way is to put this DC characters in the Roadrunner universe has been the Legion of Superheroes Bugs Bunny one, where it's kind of goofy. They were drawn in the 90s style. Bugs Bunny was drawn like exactly like the cartoon. Here we had a Wonder Woman Tasmanian Devil special that I could barely get through, where they tiered it deadly seriously. The Tasmanian Devil was this creature on Paradise Island, and they drew him to look like a giant beast. And it's just like, I don't want that at all. I don't want a serious Tasmanian Devil.
I looked through it, and I just thought, that's stupid. I didn't read it.
No, you didn't miss anything. And the backup stories, they then flip it and do it in the animated style. That's what you should be doing here. No one wants
a serious
Tasmanian Devil special. Lobo Roadrunner was a little more...
Wait, I just go back a little bit. Barry Kitson's Wonder Woman is awesome.
No, I was happy to see Barry Kitson.
I mean, like, other than everything else about it, I was like... Yeah. Get that guy. I mean, I know that he doesn't draw like monthly books like he used to, but geez.
You know, the Kitson art on Wonder Woman was great. I just don't need to take on Tasmanian Devil. And then Lobo Roadrunner is a little more successful because it was very meta. Wile E. Coyote hires Lobo to kill the Roadrunner because he just can't take it anymore. It's been 70 years and he can't kill him. And so that becomes sort of a slapsticky. That it hewed closer, but basically they set it up at the beginning where genetic experiments on animals created all these Looney Tunes-esque characters. And it's like, don't try to scientifically explain the Looney Tunes. This is like exactly the wrong thing to do with Looney Tunes. I don't know. I've been enjoying the backups more because they actually flip it around and put them into the Looney Tunes world and it makes more sense. But
At the same time, I also say, boy, we need more Kelly Jones in our lives.
Yeah, the art was great on both. And I would say the Lobo Roadrunner special is close.
Mm-hmm.
It's been the second best one, and it looked great. Kelly Jones' stuff looked great, and it worked really well for the Lobo story. And it's hard for me to even admit to liking a Lobo story. So check those out if it sounds interesting to you, but I really don't. I don't know who would find that interesting. If you do, let us know. Let's take a quick second to thank Harry's. Josh, what do you love most about shaving with Harry's? Is it the comfortable handle? Is it the smooth, close shave you get?
Well, I don't know if you spent a lot of time with my skin, but you will notice that it's actually quite sensitive. So I really – when they added that little like smooth strip?
Yes.
It's just beyond the blades that helps? That I really like. And it's not a ridiculous amount of blades. That was the other thing. In the great Blade Wars of the late 90s, people kept adding more blades. And I feel like this was the place that they landed on that worked. And I think that's correct, because I've seen them go farther, and that was stupid. It's just good. It does what I want. It's not. It's also really like that mine's orange. I'm not going to lie to you. There is a big aesthetic part of me that's like, that orange one is rad. And now that they made it all soft on the outside, it grips nicer. So that's what I like.
So for decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of their customers. So Jeff and Andy, just two ordinary jamokes, Josh, just like you and me.
Any jamoke could do it.
They were getting fed up with getting ripped off, and they started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory. By taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price of a normal blade. Just $2 a blade compared to $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore.
I also really like that part, by the way. Yeah, I used to buy the ones at the you know, you go to the CVS and get them, and it was like, you know, $20 or something for four of them. And now, you know, and I don't need them as often as you do, so I can just buy a four pack. I'm good for a year.
Yeah, you're not paying $30 for a pack of eight blades, which is, you know, what you were doing before. So just $2 a blade compared to four more. And what do you get with Harry's? Well, Harry's razors include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave: a weighted ergonomic handle, five precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. All that is in the set you get when you order a Harry's set. An exclusive offer for iFanboy listeners: Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer to iFanboy fans, go to harrys.com right now. Enter code iFanboy at checkout to get a post-shave balm, also free. That's harrys.com, code iFanboy. Thank you for sponsoring the show. Silver Surfer number 12, real quick, Dan Slott, Mike Allred. Real sad issue. Seems to wrap up the latest 12-issue arc in which Silver Surfer and Dawn Greenwood have been having their adventures in space, and she returns home to find that while she was gone, her father died. And so it was a very sad issue. She's coming to grips with the fact that she was gone and missed out on saying goodbye to her dad, and it was a bummer, but in a good way.
I think it's strange that, like, you've got, like, I don't like Dan Slott on Spider-Man anymore, but in other places, you're totally fine with him.
I mean, it's just a consequence of what he's the subject matter.
Yeah. I get it. No, I just think it's and that's good. You know, it's opposed to, I don't like his work and I won't read anything he does. It's a different thing.
Yeah, he's doing a great story here. The Mike Allred art is fantastic. And I don't know what this book is. I don't think about it too hard because I feel like it's always ending. I thought for sure this was the final issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, don't miss Silver Surfer number 13 next month. So this happened last time with the first volume of this, if you recall. I kept thinking it was the final issue, but it wasn't.
I'll tell you what it is. If Dan Slott was a iFanboy patron, his superpower would be the series never gonna end.
They
just keep going forever.
So it was really emotional, really good comic where she has to deal with her grief and her family and all this. And the consequence of being an adventurer is rarely explored, but there you go. Really good.
So Luke Cage 2, I went back, I wanted to get some more, see what was going on. I'm having a really hard time with it.
Yep.
Like, there's a lot of it right there that I like, but the trying to tie it into what the show was makes it feel really repetitive. Like, it literally, you know what? Like, if your job is to make it feel like the show, good job. Feels like the show.
Right.
But there's a lot of things going on here. And one of my problems with Luke Cage is, like, I don't know Luke Cage all that well. So I don't know if it's a problem. Like, I want to know if something's new or if this was a thing that was around before. I want to know what I'm dealing with. Like, is this a whole new interpretation or is this?
I don't know.
Bits of it.
Luke Cage is character who the origin wasn't very central, at least in the stories. Like, it's not like Batman where the origin's constantly coming up again. And I'm not saying his origin is not important. What I'm saying is the stories I read with Luke Cage and it didn't dwell on it, so I don't know exactly what his origin was. And I think from reading and doing research during the Netflix show, that is his origin. I just don't know that these new things, but they're being all these different kind of failed Luke Cages. I don't know if that's a thing from the original stories or not.
It feels like it's from the show, but the point is, like, the last series where you had him in New York dealing with the Marvel superheroes, with Danny Rand, I liked that a lot. This thing where we're taking him, we didn't get enough chance. We didn't have time with that. And now we're off somewhere else so that he can do a story that doesn't have to be about Inhumans or whatever. But I don't know. It's basically all the tools are right there and you're not using them the right way.
I find the art completely uninspiring. And
it doesn't bother me. I know we had that conversation. I know what you're saying, and I don't even disagree with you. It's fine. It's doing the job.
The weirdest thing to me, though, is that same writer, David Walker, who was so great in the team-up book, and it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that unique voice that he had in Power Man Iron Fist. It feels like they smooth the edges a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm reading all these books. You convinced me to keep reading Iron Fist, which I have been. I'm reading Jessica Jones, and I'm reading Daredevil. This, to me, is the least interesting right now.
Yeah, I want it to be successful for whatever, because I've just enjoyed those other ones so much. But that's what happens sometimes. Like, even if you keep the writer and you just rejigger the format and the artist and the whole sort of central core of the book, like it's you know, it's gone. Poof.
Yep.
It's starting. If it's feeling like that, I'm gonna read another one. I because I really want to like it again. I want it to get back on track.
I was surprised to see Superman 25 on the rundown.
What? This is the end of the Manchester Black thing, and I wanted to check in because the last issue, we were both like, that was awful. I couldn't get through it. This one wasn't so bad. It wasn't good, but it was a little, like, at least I knew it was going on, and I grabbed onto it. There's some interesting Superman things that happen at the end. Like, there's basically these, are they aliens? Or I don't know what they are.
I don't know.
Who took over the town of Hamilton, and they don't have anywhere to go, and so they want to stay there, and Superman's like, I can't trust you. You know, but they're like, well, yeah, you can. What else are you going to do? And he's like, fine. So you've got, I don't know, that's an interesting dramatic sort of thing that's going on there. I like the part about Superman being a dad. I think it works really, really well. And there are touches of that in this issue where, you know, he's losing his son. That's really scary. His son doesn't recognize him or doesn't whatever. There's a deep sort of like terror kind of thing that comes from that kind of story. And, you know, having him come out of it. Basically, maybe I'm just glad that we brushed that aside and we're done with it. Also, I like that they gave the cow a cigarette. That made me happy for a second.
It was almost redeemed the entire story by having the end reveal that Manchester Black's consciousness was put into a cow, and then they tipped it.
Yep.
I genuinely laughed at that scene.
I did too.
You know what? Good job. Funny scene.
Yep.
I can't fault you for that. They think they can resurrect Manchester Black by giving him a cigarette and doing some weird chanting, and it doesn't work, so they just tip it and laugh. So, they're kids.
Like, I feel like I know what they were trying to do here. And I don't think it worked, but I'm not so much faulting them on that. Like, I feel like they figured out, like, oh, let's get this over with in a way. You know, like, this Manchester Black thing is not, let's just wrap all this stuff up. And now we've got a clean slate. We can go on to the next thing. He gets to keep his friend, John does.
Right.
You know, and I guess, are we closing the chapter on being in Hamilton now?
Yeah, they've moved to the city in their giant triplex.
Be honest with you. I don't see why they can't maintain dual residencies, because apparently money is not an issue.
Yeah.
And you know, they're somewhat fast. They don't have to commute.
I wanted to see the story where Bruce again has to co-sign another lease. He's like, come on. You know your journalist salary can't cover this, and I'm going to end up paying for this house.
He doesn't even care.
G.I. Joe number 6. So the G.I. Joe is still teaming up with the Transformers in this.
It's just the one whose name it just completely got away from me. It's the bad guy, Jet.
Starscream?
No, it's not Starscream. It's the other one whose name I can't think of. It's not important. Okay. I love having that guy on the team, by the way. Like, he's just it's ridiculous. But the only reason this is here is that I don't know if you guys listened to the patron hangout that we did, but we talked about our favorite Joes. And in a page here, they're introducing two more Joes that come onto the scene. And you Starfire, I believe, is his name.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I flipped the page and there's Spirit and Tunnel Rat. I was like, hell yeah.
Oh,
I was very excited. And it's like a sort of newfangled Spirit. They're like, you doing that shaman stuff? And he's like, that must have skipped a generation. No. Like, he's a tracker.
Right.
He's
badass. He's
cool. Yeah. And then, you know, Tunnel Rat, like, you and I learned the word Tunnel Rat from the G.I. Joe cartoon. I'm like, oh, that's funny. He's Tunnel Rat. And then at some point later, we learn what a Tunnel Rat actually was, and it's the most horrifying thing on Earth. And I'm continuing to be enchanted by that dichotomy.
There's a lot of that in G.I. Joe.
Yep.
A lot of the horrors of Vietnam being worked out through G.I. Joe, and unbeknownst to the 10-year-olds reading it in 1984.
Yep. Being turned into a 3¾-inch action figure to sort of work. Skywarp. I'm sorry. Skywarp is the
point. If you're a patron and you enjoy the G.I. Joe chalk, hang on. I've got an idea for the next month that involves G.I. Joe.
Oh, great. There's a bit of a tribal magic thing going on here with these two tiny cute things turn into giant monsters that they have to fight. And then immediately after that, Roadblock turns into a giant monster with horns that they have to fight. It's batshit. And it's unabashed.
I have to admit, I keep wanting to read this, and I have a couple of them on my iPad. I think I have the first three.
I'm not sure you're going to like it.
I want to see for myself.
I like the sort of just unrequited, just go for it. There's no shame with it being super goofy. The artist has his name in his second name. So his name is Giannis Milanogiannis, which is baller. You may remember him for he was on Profit.
Yes.
So it's left of center sort of.
Well, I like that. So I'm gonna try to find. I got some trips coming. I got some flights coming up. So maybe I'll load all these up in my iPad and read them.
I'm gonna say by the time like the first three, you're gonna be a little what is this, and then by like 4 through 6, you're just like, fuck it, let's go with it. Dire Wraiths, whatever.
I make no promises, though, because I just started the new Neil Stevenson book, so...
It's fine.
All-Star Batman, number 11, Scott Snyder, Raphael Albuquerque, Jordi Belair. I believe this is the second to last issue, and they're going to change format.
I think if we know anything about when you and I do shows, that we should not make these kind of predictions about what the end of a book is.
It felt like Coming Home Again.
All I know for sure is that if Dan Slott wrote it, it's not the last issue.
Right.
I'm willing to make that call.
What I like about this is I enjoy Alfred stories, young Alfred stories. When you're a kid, he's Alfred. He's just a British butler. And then it was like, no, he was also an actor. So he's really good at mimicking. And that's why Batman's good at stagecraft and makeup. And then you realize, oh, no, he was also a soldier. And that's why he's, you know, can do all the things he do. He's a medic. And, you know, he's the man who can do everything. And they actually do a plausible job here of explaining how Alfred went from being a British punk, like literally with the leather jacket and the mohawk, to being Alfred.
Scott Snyder got his Garth Ennis on in this one.
Yeah, I like this a lot.
Yeah,
and Raphael Albuquerque is a great Batman artist.
That's not untrue.
I mean, he's just a great artist in general, great for anybody, but I also liked the swerve where Bruce is pretending to be Hush, and then Penguin thinks he's Batman pretending to be Hush, and no one quite figured us out that Batman is Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
It's like the pieces are all right there, but they're all overthinking it.
Here's the thing. Like, I was confused a little. I put it together, but like, I don't know Hush. I've never read a Hush story in my life.
Hush is a guy, and I've blocked out most of it because it was so terrible, but he's a guy who looks exactly like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And so when they capture him, they think, good Hush costume, Batman. It's like, you're overthinking it, Penguin. He's Bruce Wayne. I like this a lot. I like
Raphael Albuquerque's Penguin. I like his Florida Vacation Penguin.
Well, they're all in Miami. This is Miami Vacation Gothamites. They're all just living life. Even Bruce is wearing like white. I mean, it's just like,
you got to.
This is where Scott Snyder gets to just do it, you know.
I like that. I think it works better.
Yeah.
For me.
I also really like the winding clock structure of telling the story of Alfred's father. Well, he didn't have a dad. His dad is busy winding the clocks in Wayne Manor. That was nice. It was good. Let's talk about Star Wars. Stay in Star Wars Corner. We can't apparently get away from it. Darth Vader number two.
Darth Vader number two. Number two. And this is a very different sort of Darth Vader thing than the last Darth Vader series, which was a big surprise. This is like Darth Vader right after becoming Darth Vader.
Right. Young Vader.
Like he doesn't have his red lightsaber yet. He's basically on the quest to kill a Jedi so that he can steal his kyber crystal and make his own thing out of it. Mm-hmm. His own lightsaber out of it.
How is it?
I read it almost out of habit because I really enjoyed that Kieran Gillen one so much. And this is such a different thing. This is so much more straight ahead Star Wars. This feels like what they wanted more than what Kieran Gillen gave them,
More traditionally Star Wars, more traditionally Darth Vader.
I don't love it, but Giuseppe Camuncoli is like the best guy drawing Star Wars books right now.
Yeah, you guys talked about that last time. We talked about number one, it's the opposite of kind of what Ron was complaining about last week with Star Wars, where it gets very photo referencey.
Yep, just like this is the kind of artist that they need to use. So, like, it's not bad, but I don't know. Like, I'm interested. I'm interested in Darth Vader's story of like Darth Vader coming up. But like it's very like there's ideas that we have in our heads and whether what is being done here jives with what that is or doesn't is incredibly subjective.
100%. And that's the biggest problem these books deal with is no fault of their own. They're dealing with 40 years of stories that we've told ourselves in our heads. And now we don't fit for good or for bad that we take it out in the stories.
And to be fair, I feel exactly the same way about the movies. I mean, this is basically the same thing I brought into Rogue One. I was like, oh, I don't want to be told this story.
Right.
It's just interesting. It's an interesting time. I feel like I'm going to end up – and it's funny. I can actually take it in comics better than I can in the movie because the comics, it's easy enough for me to be like,
you can disregard it. The movie is a language that is familiar to you and it features the actors and it's hard.
But if you like that kind of thing, this isn't bad. You know, like, I actually like it that when they don't ignore the prequels because it's part of it. Like, I don't feel like I'm getting cheated or trying to make something out of it. And I like to see what they can do. It's almost like it's like watching somebody do math in a way. Like, it's kind of like it's not making me exciting, but I'm like, how are they going to get away with this? I kind of like that part of it.
All right. Well,
so I'm not dropping it, but I don't love it. There's no wackiness to it.
So those are the books we want to read to talk about this week. We read a lot of great books. I had a fun time reading comics, despite the fact that I think when you add all the pages together, I probably had 30 books.
Yeah. I had 17 for me is.
But when you add the extra DC pages in, anyway, let's not get into the math of it. Math is boring. But let's talk about the patron pick. As Josh mentioned earlier, when we first opened the voting, The Mighty Thor took an early lead from all the people who wanted me to read it. Now, we made some jokes early in the show. We actually really enjoy your votes, your picks. We enjoy if you target us. All of it's fun. This is all for fun and games. So we all thought, and I was preparing to read The Mighty Thor until I logged on Thursday morning to find that shirtless bear fighter number one from Image Comics had taken not only the lead, but a decisive lead. And if you read the comments section in the patron page, you'll see why. They banded together to the shirtless bear fighter fans to make us read this comic, written by Jody Lehip, Sebastian Gerner, and art by Neil Vindrell, and color by Mike Spicer, letters by Dave Lampier. And Shirtless Bear Fighter is about a dude who fights bears.
Yeah.
I liked it, but I didn't love it. I don't know that I ever want to read any more of it. What I felt was, okay, lean into it. You've created this ridiculous world in which humans and bears live together, and it's sort of like a Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, The Commando, where one guy living in the woods can save everyone, and they have to convince him to help, and they do it with flapjacks, and he's naked, and he's got a giant penis, and they blur it out, but you can still see it, and bears are a part of society, and they have bear advertisements, and the bears are also hunted and feared. I don't know the world or the logic. It didn't really have a lot, but I figured if you're going to go for it and make it as weird as possible. And that's what I think they did. I can imagine you liked it at all.
No, I did not.
I read this. Josh is going to hate this. Ron would love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. No, that's exactly it. Why do I hate it? Why do you think I hate it? This is more interesting than talking
about.
There's
not a lot of
anything.
It
original?
Feels weird for weird's sake.
Yes.
And you don't like weird for weird's sake.
Well, that's not entirely
usually,
true, but it depends.
Occasionally, you shark, land shark,
right.
Bear shark.
So it depends on the flavor. And to me, this felt like that. Like it was like they looked at grizzly shark versus sea bear, and they looked at what was the other one that the guy who does the book with Charles Soule now, the astronauts. God Hates Astronauts,
right?
Which I really liked for a little while, and then I was like, that's enough. And it feels like let's make a book like one of those. And they did, but there wasn't really much to it that, like, he likes pancakes. That's funny. But he won't call them pancakes. He has to call them flapjacks. Ha, that's funny. You get away with it if you're John Layman and Rob Guillory. Mm-hmm. Other people, like, you know, not always. There wasn't anything extra here that made me see something unique about it. How's that?
I liked the advertisement, fuzzy wipes, don't rub your ass on a tree like a dumb bear. That was funny. I feel like if I was really high, I would love this. I can respect it. I just don't want to read any more of it. I was like, you know, this is amusing. I get it. You're making this as weird as possible. And I found some of the jokes funny. I liked that the people all had scars. Like the cops all had bear claw scars. Like even the girl had a little one above her lip. Mm-hmm. Little details like that I liked. Because they're in a society where bears are a problem. You know, it's kind of a one-note joke. Or maybe a three-note joke that they just hit those three notes over and over and over again.
When I mean, like, from like whenever anything feels like a reiteration of a genre that's sort of a niche genre that we've seen a couple of great examples of, it falls really flat. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it wasn't like the art was fine. Like it was what it was supposed to be. Yeah, I had no problem.
Neil Vindrell. I thought it was really strong art, really strong cartooning. The giant penis joke was weird until he put pants on. Suddenly, his giant penis disappeared. It's like, well, he would. You'd see it in the pants still.
Yeah, like shots of Bon Scott from the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it goes away. There are magic pants.
Well, maybe it was cold out. You don't know. Maybe he had been cycling.
I felt like I got enough. I got to the end and I was like, okay, I get it.
You know what it felt like? It felt like a viral advertising campaign by, like, Old Spice.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, this is funny for like 8 seconds in a commercial, or, you know, like this, the Sasquatch one, the Jack Lynx, like that kind of thing. It felt like that, but in a comic book form. And it didn't give me anything.
For 20 pages, I had fun with it, and now we're done. Our relationship is over. Ratings.
I'm not mad at it, like Star Wars Shortcake.
I ain't mad at you. Ratings, I'm going to give it a 4, because I liked reading it.
Oh, come on.
No, seriously.
Okay. 2.
2. Sticking with it.
Nope.
No. But I respect you, Shirtless Bear Fighter, for your commitment. So now let's also talk about patrons. So if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, you can sign up to be our patron. You can engage in the patron pick vote. Anyone who's a patron can vote, and that happens every week. We update it all throughout the day on our Slack channel. We like watching the votes come in. It's fun for us. Also there, if you give it the $5 level, you get your very own superpower. Every week we thank our patrons by giving them a dumb superpower on the show. Again, patreon.com/ifanboy is where you can do that. And first up is Josh.
Yes, the first one that has come up is Drew Hamilton. And Drew Hamilton always gets the interview. Meaning that if you're searching for a job, the hardest thing is to get the interview.
Always.
He always gets the interview. Doesn't mean he's going to get the job. Doesn't mean he's going to nail the interview.
They always
but
call
he
him
gets
in,
the interview.
Yeah.
Yep, always gets the call in.
So it's on him basically to get the job.
Yeah, totally.
Which is half the battle, getting in the room, Drew.
Oh, I think it's more than half. It's tough.
Tough out there. So Drew doesn't have to deal with the resume black hole, where
exactly.
You send out your resume and never hear, but he always gets called.
He also doesn't have to know anyone.
Oh, there you go. So you're saying he can get an interview at, like, Google?
He's getting in there.
Then they're like, you're totally unqualified for Google. Why are you here?
Yeah, that's,
I don't know.
Nobody's saying...
You called me.
You know, that it's going to go well, but he can get in.
There you go. Michael Nohaley. I apologize if that's incorrectly pronounced. Nohaley. Michael's power, and this may be one that's come up before, but I don't care if it has. He can make buddies with them if it's true. He's a human remote control.
I wrote a book about that.
So he can mimic anything you need on a remote control for whatever you would need a remote control for. He can open your garage door. He can change your channel. He can lower the volume on your computer. He can activate your Apple TV.
You're literally plagiarizing me.
I'm sorry.
It's my first comic script.
It's a long time ago.
It was. And look where it got me.
So Michael is, you know, never has to worry about the batteries running out. Never has to worry about finding that lost remote control. Like the other day, I couldn't find my Blu-ray remote control. Like, he wouldn't have that problem. He would just be able to start playing the movie. So there you go.
Well, there are other remote... Anyway, I'm not going to try to solve your tech problems.
Yes, I know there are other options, but this particular one, it was a thing. I was in a hurry.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Next up is Jacob Masters. And Jacob has the ability to instantly cool any hot or instantly warm any cool liquid that is flying towards him.
That is flying towards him?
Well, like if somebody spills a cup of hot coffee on him or he's going to jump into a cold body of water, when he is sent towards fluids or fluids are sent towards him, he automatically adjusts the temperature so that it's comfortable.
But he can't do it to like a cup of tea.
Nope.
What if he threw the tea in the air?
Yeah, it's a defensive mechanism.
Interesting.
I am famously, well, not really famously, because only 2 or 3 people know about this. I hate getting into water. I'm very slow at entering pools.
Is that because of the temperature?
Yep.
We've never delved too deep into this. We just accepted it.
Yeah, no, I'm very slow at getting it. And all you have to do is just jump in and then you're fine. And I understand it and I eventually do that. But there's something about that that I don't like. That brief moment. I have to go get a cortisone shot on my wrist right now. I'm just avoiding it because of the 9 seconds of discomfort compared to just being okay after that.
Eesh.
Right? It's a problem. This one's just about me, apparently. It didn't start off that way. I just saw a GIF about somebody throwing coffee on somebody and wrote it down. But then it turned into a whole thing.
Evan Marquez, thank you for being a patron. Evan Marquez is the power of donuts.
Continue.
Whatever you want it to be, Josh.
How?
He can create the best donut in the world. He can create a donut specific to your memory. I had this great donut once. He can make you that donut. He is a master of all donuts.
It's like he can put holes in anything.
He can't spin his car around in a cool parking lot donut, but he can make you donuts.
Uh-huh.
It's a tragedy.
So you're talking about specifically related to the food donut.
Yeah, he wants to be able to do cool, you know, rubber burning spins in the parking lot, but he just can't do it. It's a tragedy.
You know what I want?
What? Donuts.
I would like a nutritiously healthy, non-problematic
donut. He can make a donut, the most delicious donut you've ever had, and it will not cause you any adverse health effects. Here's the thing. Evan Marquez could open the most profitable store in history of the world, but Evan Marquez will not use his power for personal gain.
I mean, we know that. He's a character.
A good guy. He's a great guy.
He's an upstanding
Everyone
character.
Always says Evan Marquez is a great guy.
The donut guy?
Yeah, the donut guy.
Will not
take advantage of his powers.
Stand-up guy.
Very serious about it.
Well, let me ask you this, though. If it's a gift, if it's a thing that he has, I mean, and he just wanted to make a living.
He could give him away, but, you know.
Right, but say that he just starts up his own donut shop.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's good at. It's what he loves to do. Makes a living that way. He's not driving a Porsche.
True. He could charge very little.
Yeah. He charge a fair price.
Evan, what we're saying is you should reevaluate your philosophies.
I don't think there's anything wrong with making an honest living on that.
Yeah, and Josh is saying if you wanted to open it in the New England area, he'd be fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be tough because there's a large Dunkin' Donuts presence, and I don't think that they'd believe you. And even so, they'd light their cigarettes and say, what? I always liked the fucking donuts, been eating my whole life. You gotta go eat your weird fucking vegan weird donuts. Go fuck yourself, Evan.
They burn his store down.
Yep.
Chant, go Pats. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can go to sign up. You can join in the Patreon pick voting and you get your own superpower. Patreon.com/iFanboy.
And then Mark Wahlberg shows up. He's like, he was just trying to make good donuts for you guys, okay? Why would you do that to his store?
The t-shirt store is launched. Speaking of stores, ifanboy.threadless.com. That's where you find our t-shirts that the patrons unlocked for you. 4 designs, 2 classic, iFanboy and Herm, and 2 new shirts, the Pick of the Week podcast and the ratings shirt, which I just wore the other day. Very comfortable shirts. More designs coming soon. We are sketching them out. We don't want to put them out too often because we don't want you thinking. We can't be pumping out shirts every month.
We will run out of ideas. A lot of people say, no, not a problem. We will run out of ideas.
Hope maybe once a quarter there'll be a new shirt design. Well, we haven't figured out the schedule yet, but then there'll be a new one coming soon. Check those out at ifanboy.threadless.com and also ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can go find your Amazon link, do all your Amazon shopping via that page, or just the link, copy that link, put it in your browser, never think about it again. You can also find the direct donation button via PayPal. Eccentric billionaires are welcome, as always, to donate whatever tax sheltery money they need to get rid of. Go for it. I don't know if any of that makes sense from a financial standpoint. I don't have any money. Just the way it goes.
Right. We don't know how rich people operate.
Don't know.
Because
we're podcasting.
The greatest, most successful thing we've ever done is talk about comic books. And so you do the math on that one.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Once again, that's where you can go sign up directly, become a what was before an iFanboy member, now a patron at patreon.com/iFanboy. In addition to the voting, in addition to the special powers, in addition to the monthly hangout that we just did, we spent talking about G.I. Joe, which was super fun. We also have our stretch goals. Our next goal, we are exactly $500 away from at the time of this recording, and that's the monthly non-comics media podcast. And here is our pledge to you. If we can hit that stretch goal in the next month, we will do a show on Transformers The Last Knight. Is that the name of it? I don't even know.
I don't know. It's the one where he has a sword.
All we know is that the reviews are terrible. The Rotten Tomato number last time I looked was 16.
Higher than expected.
We said we would do a non-comics media show. Josh said he would see it if the numbers were really low on the Rotten Tomato. They seem to be. Both of those things seem to be coming together. So if you can get us to our next stretch goal in the next month, we will do you a show on Transformers The Last Knight. It's got to be the next month because then it's not going to be in the theaters that long.
We got to save Prime, okay? Are you kidding me? It's still going to make $1 billion.
In China, not here.
Whatever.
So that is the way you can help us. We think everyone does that. Let's do a couple of emails. We've lost control of the clock. I have no idea where we are. Tony from San Antonio, Texas says, I've been really thinking about this question for 27 months, which is a fair amount of time. That's fine. What is it about Mikkel Janin's artwork that I dislike so much? For some reason, every character looks like the worst CGI since the Scorpion King. I wanted to continue with Batman this week, but the artwork really just gets under my skin. It feels so synthetic and lifeless. Keep in mind, I'm fully aware of the artist's objective. He is very talented, and I could do no better. But I am curious, is there a particular technique he uses? Is it actually CGI? Do you guys like it? Remember that big DC Wednesday comics book? There was an absolutely awful Hawkman comic by Kyle Baker that was done using cutting-edge computer imagery. I can't even look at it. It bugs me so much. I remember liking that Hawkman story by Kyle Baker.
Well, this is what we're going to get to. So also, I'm going to read another one from Ron, Not that one. In Texas.
Okay.
Also Texas. This is Ron from Texas. I've been thinking about how to phrase this question since that night on the lake, since that night by the lake on Naboo. That's funny. I have heard you guys talk about art on various comics for years. We have too. And I know art is subjective, but how do you make the determination in your minds that one book has terrible art while another is making a style choice? For example, I've heard you guys sing the praises of Mike Allred's art on Silver Surfer, and I can recognize Allred's work at a glance, but it's just not for me. I think it's the way that he draws lips. I hear you, Ron. I don't buy books that use him as an artist, but I recognize that his style of drawing is not for me and others like it. However, let's take a look at X-Men Gold number 6. The art is by R.B. Silva, and I think it's just awful. There are many pages where I can't tell what the characters are supposed to be doing, panels where facial features are just barely there, and seeming a lack of perspective in drawing several characters in action scene. This is just all-around terrible art, in my opinion, and I think I will drop the book because of it. What do you say? What leads you to distinguish between art that is just not your cup of tea and something that is just plain bad? So as you see, these are two are related. They're talking about some books that were literally in a rundown today, and we haven't talked about this in a little while.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they both acknowledge art is subjective. Tony, we do like Mikkel Jenny. We just talked about it. We were all big fans.
And also, I think I don't see what you're seeing in that artwork.
I don't see it either.
There is a reference. You can see it a little bit, but also I think it's softened. Something's going on with the art or the inking or the color or whatever that makes it a little more organic-y.
It's important to note that a lot of artists, if not most, use some sort of computer enhancement.
Reference.
Yeah, even if it's just the backgrounds and the buildings and cities and things, some of them build like rooms and stuff, and they just, you know, orient them in the background and then draw over them. Like what's that computer program?
Google SketchUp.
So there's a lot of computer aided art happening. You know, one of our favorite artists, Michael Lark, does that. Although he has his backgrounds are a lot of Photoshop photographs. Mm-hmm. So that's the way. Cause I would never pick Mikkel Jenny as someone who I would think is doing like, I don't even know what he means by CGI, honestly.
I think it reminds him of that. I think this is a lot of guys who use – I think that he's a person – and there's a tradition of them, guys who use photographs to draw from.
Well, that's photo referencing, yeah.
No, like Mitch Gerrits uses photographs. He takes photos and then – I don't know if he draws over them, but it's softened over the years. It doesn't look as – Tony Harris is another guy who does that. If you read the first half of Starman, you know, he takes photos. He art directs them and, you know, he like basically – you know, that's the first, that's his underdrawing, right. You know, basically. It's a style. You may not love it. It may not be a thing. And I can see some of that in Janine's art, for sure.
Interesting.
It's softened. If you look at the earlier stuff, we go back to that Justice League stuff, Justice League Dark, I think it'd be a little more. But really the larger question is, both of these is like, what's the difference? When is it bad? When is it not for you? Why is it, you know, one way or another? Okay, so I've thought about this a lot. Mm-hmm. I've thought about this for at least 11 years.
Whoa.
Probably more. Because this is what we talk about all the time.
I would say 17 years.
Yeah. We have to justify why when we're talking about art and what's bad and what isn't. Okay. There are some things about comic book art that is not subjective. There are some things that are objective. Foremost of that is being able to tell a story, which is alluded to in Ron's question, which is, you know, are you getting lost either in the panels and we have among ourselves had discussions and disagreements and agreements about sort of what that means, what works and what doesn't. So it's not fully objective, but there is sort of a baseline level of having the skill of being able to tell a story. And there are a lot of artists out there who get work who do not seem spectacular because they can tell a story and they can do it on a deadline and they're not pains in the ass to work with.
Style aside, the most important job a comic artist has is to tell a story cohesively, coherently. And if you can't do that, then that becomes a objective problem, regardless of style. Like,
right.
Michael Allred can tell a story, but you may not like his style, but you can still tell a story. There are a lot of artists that can't really tell a panel story. You lose the action. You lose what's happening. The characters all look the same. There's no emotion in them. Those are all more objective failures in storytelling than they are subjective stylistic things.
And that's
where bad art comes in. Style, you can object all day long because it's a personal thing, but sometimes it's style we don't like, and sometimes it's, well, this is a mess of storytelling, and that's another thing we talk about.
And we always try to distinguish between that because those are different things. Like, I don't like Mike Allred's work all that much. I want to. I don't know why I don't. Maybe it's the lips. But like it's like he's clearly not bad. Like, that's not the same thing. It's just not my favorite style. Or, you know, Howard Chaykin is another guy like that. Howard Chaykin is a guy that Marvel brings in to teach people how to make comic books. Like, a lot of people who you wouldn't have suspected, like, were brought in, like, you're hang out with Howard for the day and he's gonna school you. Now you might look at his art and I'll be like, why is this good? Why do people like this? And it's, you know, because it's not your thing style wise either, or even tonally of the story might not be. That's also perfectly valid, but he knows how the pieces work. And that's, you know, that's the big thing. Style's harder. Taste is harder. And then there's anatomy. There's that, you know, like sort of the ability to.
Yeah. We often talk about, well, I've been saying it too, but Ron has as well. We feel like a lot of the art that's coming out now is not at a professional level. Coming from Marvel and DC.
Okay, yeah.
And that's, when I say that, it's usually because there's anatomy problems, there's dynamism problems in that all the panels are the same medium shot, there's no interesting angles being taken. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily they can't tell a story, but there's a certain level of professionalism that grows beyond. It's kind of like, in film terms, if you look at the early films of Kevin Smith, he just locked the camera down and it was like a play. The action just took place in front of the camera. It never moved, it never cut. That's kind of what I'm talking about in terms of unprofessional comic art at a Marvel or DC level. You've got to be able to dynamically tell a story.
And it should be noted, some people can do that.
Yeah.
And their style lets them get away with it.
Right.
I'm thinking of the Luna brothers.
Okay. Yes, that's the style I don't really like. So there you go. That's
right.
An example of it.
And some people do, whatever.
Totally. You guys like it, and they can get away with having a simpler style. I just don't particularly like that. But that's mm-hmm. that's. We can't give you a list of 10 bullet points that explains it all, because it's all artistic and it's all – it's kind of like, you know it when you see it kind of thing. And it's tough. It's hard when you're someone who isn't a fan of what everyone else is raving about, because you feel like either you don't understand, you're left out, you can't – you know, something you're not getting. I
mean, that's me and Jim Lee for my entire life. Like, I don't get it.
And it could just be as simple as it's just not a style that you respond to.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong, with that.
Also, I don't know how good he is anymore. But like, if you look at what we were talking about, that backup in Peter Parker Spider-Man, mm-hmm. that Goran Parlov art, instantly that resonated with me. And that was before I realized who I was looking at, because I've said I like Goran Parlov a lot in the past. There's been lots of stories they've done. There's something about that style, that simpler line-based, more cartooning, the Darwin Cook or, you know, Bruce Timm, yeah. the kind of thing. Where, and I didn't always like that, even Jack Kirby, like it's all right there. And actually, Mike Allred's kind of in that camp, but his is super stylized in a way that some of those others aren't. That's the game. But, you know, part of what we've had to learn to do is to recognize the difference between I don't like this and this doesn't work, which are two different things.
Right.
And that only takes, you know, study, learning, and practice, I think.
So there you go. Thanks for writing us in, Tony and Ron, both from Texas. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com to get your questions on the show. Those are great questions, so we appreciate that. Also, include your name, where you're from, how long you've been thinking about your question, and if you send an audio question in as well, send an MP3 to the same address. Keep it around 30 seconds, because anything longer than that, we can't really put on the show. Plug time. Our Wonder Woman show is still in the feed. Our Iron Fist show is still in the feed. You can find all our old special edition podcasts. They're all right there. In a couple weeks, we'll have Spider-Man Homecoming. In fact, I think it's in 2 weeks. 2 weeks or so, Spider-Man Homecoming, so there'll be another one.
And again, if you want the new Transformers movie.
That's right. You want to hear Josh talk about Mark Wahlberg? I think it'd be fun.
We break the next stretch goal. I'll do the whole thing as Mark Wahlberg.
We haven't talked about Transformer movies since the second one. I haven't seen one since the second one, so it'll be interesting.
I literally haven't talked about a Transformers movie since I finished talking to you about the second one.
Right, so if you want to hear that show, patreon.com/ifanboy.
You can find our last Booksplode, which was also a patron goal reward, on Jeff Lemire's Roughneck. And then we owe you a Talksplode for the month of June. And it will be here, if not at the very end of June, the very beginning of July. I've got it lined up. I'm just doing a little scheduling, got to figure out when it's going to happen, but it's done. It's a writer of some very significant and interesting books, but I'm not promising you anything quite yet because, you know.
Listen, time is a flat circle. Sometimes the June show comes out and begins July.
Well, sometimes you have little kids and school's out. And there you go.
And this is where Ron will tell you about Damn Fine Podcast, which is Ron's Twin Peaks show he does with Tom Merritt. Over at damnfinepodcast.com, they're talking about Twin Peaks: The Return right now. Last week, their guest in the show was one half of the writing team that is James S.A. Corey, the writers of the Expanse series, which Ron and I are big fans of that, so that was exciting.
Wow.
I don't know who his next guest is, but I know he's been talking to some comics people. to get on the show because there's a lot of comics fans who like Twin Peaks. So check that out.
He just wants to have Gabe back on again, right?
I can't speak for the show. I'm not in charge. I'm merely a frequent guest. But that show comes out every Sunday night right after Twin Peaks: The Return airs. You can find that danfinepodcast.com.
You want to take your mouse or your browser. You want to hit Command L. And type in ifanboy.com, and there you're going to find all of our other podcasts and things that we've done in the past, all the shows that we just talked about and all the ones that preceded them. You can like facebook.com/ifanboy and @ifanboy on Twitter to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, and a couple of other little things sprinkled in there. And of course, you can follow us individually on both Twitter and Instagram @JFlanagan, @RonXO, and CS Kilpatrick.
And finally, if you like the show, please write a review on iTunes. That's for any podcast you listen to. That's how people find podcasts. Better than that is to tell your friends at the comic store, your friends who read books, who might like what we talk about. Tell them about iFanboy. People still do it all the time on Twitter. We see that, and we thank you, everyone who does that. Introducing people to iFanboy is a great way to help spread the love around. And that's it for this week's show. I have no idea how long it's running. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Goodbye. Thank you for the time.
Now if a six turned out to be nine, oh, I don't mind. Oh, I don't mind. If all the hippies cut off all of their hair, I don't care. I don't care. Dig, 'cause I got my own words to live through it, and I ain't gonna copy you. White collar conservative flashing down the street, pointing their plastic finger at me. They'll bassoon my can of drop and die.